You are listening to They Must Be Destroyed on Sight. The following podcast contains adult language, adult situations, and spoilers for the movies discussed occur often. You've been warned. Now, take it away, Dr. Rausch.
They must be destroyed on sight.
Hello. It is They Must Be Destroyed on Sight, intermission episode 47. I'm your host, Lee Russell. If you're not familiar with the intermission episodes, they're shorter episodes where I might talk about some movies I've watched in the last little while. It's basically that segment from regular episodes of They Must Be Destroyed on Sight, but we're just talking about that, and it's nothing else, basically. And my co-host is with the most. This is actually in the chat right now, because I am doing this live on my YouTube channel as well as just an experiment. I just wanted to play around with some of the options on StreamYard to see if I could like get something half decent looking in the video to do like a live episode without having to pay $240 a year, which seems very steep. I don't even pay that much for my hosting of the actual podcast episodes on Podbean. So I just wanted to, you know, see if I could get away with something half decent. And you know, if this ends up looking okay, and maybe if I start getting people to watch like the live episodes I do every once in a while, if I make that a thing, then yeah, maybe I'll pay the money. Who knows? We'll see. But yeah, I'm going to talk about some stuff. Usually don't talk about TV all that much, but I did watch the new Fallout TV series, so I'm going to talk about that a little bit. Then I got like three recent movie watches I'm going to talk about, and that'll basically be the episode. And there you go. Like I said, if you've never listened to an intermission episode before, they're shorter. They're just basically the What We've Been Watching segment on the regular They Must Be Destroyed on Sight episodes. So there you go. We'll be back after a very, very quick break and some music.
You ungodly warlock.
There's this show called Movie Melt, and you probably know about it. And it's once every two... I have no idea how often this is uploaded. And it's a show where a bunch of compañeros get together, and we play some fun games, trivia mainly. We talk about new releases. We have some fun games where we try and guess the title of a movie based on stuff that really probably religious people write on IMDb. Yeah, it takes about 20 hours to record. There's always a failure midway through. And then the highlight of the week of the show is reviewing a movie. Usually it's kind of a interesting, lesser known cult type movie, and it's quite enjoyable. It sounds good in theory, yes. I might have a listen one day.
Wow.
Wow.
You ungodly warlock.
Okay, that was one of the title, one of the versions of the title theme to Sabata, the original Sabata film, done by Marcello Giambini. I believe I got that name correct. About as good as I usually do with Italian names. Anyway, we're back. We got a few things to talk about. Like I said, basically what I've watched lately. I've watched what a lot of people have watched and have raved about recently, the Fallout TV series that just came to Amazon Prime. All 8 episodes dropped. They dropped it early. And yeah, it's pretty much deserving of the praise it gets, I think. It's not the most amazing thing ever done, okay? But it's pretty good. It's like a satisfying, like, you know, grilled cheese sandwich or something. You know, it's not gourmet food, but it's comfort food, and it's really good food. So, of course, it's produced by Bethesda Game Studios, who did all the not all the video games, but have been doing the video games since Fallout 3. And they just published basically New Vegas. I think it was like they brought a bunch of the original creators of the original 2 Fallout games and like the side games. Obsidian Studios or whatever the fuck it was. And did that Fallout New Vegas, which is much more in line with the original couple games. But then they went on, of course, to do Fallout 4, and they've done Fallout Shelter, Fallout 76, all that crap. And that's kind of what, in the general consciousness these days, people kind of think of when they think of Fallout, if they think of it at all. And of course, that's all headed by Todd Howard, controversial figure in video games, because he seems like he's kind of a blowhard who promises a lot of bullshit and makes a lot of excuses for why Bethesda sometimes, you know, does some pretty shady stuff with their dealings and put out broken games and whatnot. But we're not talking about video games here. We're talking about the series. I'll say this for it. As much as Bethesda is sometimes kind of like not liked for taking Fallout in a certain direction and putting their own kind of spin on things, it does a good job of incorporating kind of all of Fallout as a giant entity, like the entire franchise of video games. It's like it's got little bits from all of it, a little kind of put into it. Like the plot is very close to sort of the sort of stuff that happens in the first 2 Fallout games. And honestly, most of the Fallout games kind of follow a similar plot. You're in a vault. You come out of the vault for a certain reason. And then you go on your quests and shit. And of course, this one probably follows Fallout 3 even more closely in a way, although it's totally different characters. It's totally different story, they say, basically. But yeah, I thought it was pretty decent. The actors they got in this, Ella Purnell is the lead actress. She looks like a grown-up version of Winnie Cooper. You know, if you had told me, oh, that's Danica McPatrick or whatever her name is, Danica, I would have kind of believed you almost. She's got those big eyes. She kind of looks like what Winnie Cooper would look like if she, you know, really grew up, like became like a, you know, a taller girl and stuff and whatever. I don't know. But she's really good. She gives off this sort of like feeling of like innocence and wonder and basically just being a person who's sheltered, who's been in a vault all of her life and is not ready for the surface world. It's got Aaron Moten. I don't know who he is, but he's playing a guy who joined up with the Brotherhood of Steel, if you know who they are. It's got Colin McLaughlin in a couple episodes playing Ella Purnell's dad, and there's some shady stuff going on with him, but it's kind of fun to see him in something other than Twin Peaks or some other David Lynch kind of thing. And if he strangely feels kind of at home in this kind of situation where, you know, David Lynch kind of draws a lot on those sort of like soap opera 1950s American values and a lot of the aesthetics for his films and stuff. So I don't know, Kyle MacLachlan just kind of fits. It just feels weird, but he kind of fits. I think the big thing everyone's talking about, though, is Walton Goggins, who's playing the ghoul in this. He's playing a ghoul, of course. There's plenty of ghouls in the Fallout universe. And he's probably the most interesting character because the backstory as it's revealed, you know, he was around before the war started and he was a famous actor. And there was just all this scare of communists in Hollywood. And there's all this backstory stuff going on. And they build on it pretty well. I think they do a pretty good job of telling most of these people's stories and fleshing them out in 8 episodes, which is saying something. Although all the episodes are like an hour, basically. So it's not one of those things like one of those Marvel shows where they'll have 6 episodes. One episode will be hour 15 minutes, and then the rest of them will all be like 30 minutes or whatever. Even more so if, you know, like the Star Wars shows these days, like the fucking Mandalorian series, where it's like, oh, we've got 8 episodes of Mandalorian and the first episode's an hour and 15 minutes and then the rest of them are all like 20 to 30 minutes at the most, you know, that kind of thing. They don't do that here. So they have plenty of stuff going on, plenty of fun little characters popping up. They got some cameos here and there. I don't want to spoil any of that crap. I don't really want to spoil the central storylines. I'll just say they do a really good job of sort of capturing the sense of humor, the quirkiness of the Fallout games. They do a real good job of sort of visualizing everything. Like, everything looks pretty much perfect, like what you would see if you're actually in the video game. So that works out really well. And like I said, I'm live here, so there are comments. Well, they're not, you know, tumbling in here. I've got 2 comments. One was from my co-host Lee. Other comment here from CB Fall, a longtime viewer and listener of my stuff, saying, hey, Lee, hello, CB Fall. Hope you're doing well. But yeah, Fallout TV series, it was worthy to binge. I did it all in one night. You don't necessarily have to do that, but it was an easy watch. It was a very easy watch. I had 8 hours, basically, where I didn't have anything to do. So I went through it all in that, like, 8 hours. And of course, I took some breaks. I didn't just go straight 8 hours. I'm not 17. I can't do that shit. But I liked it. I didn't think it was, like, super serious. Like, oh, there's, like, these super dramatic beats and this very poignant, you know, poignant, like, amazing fucking social commentary and stuff. Like, you know, it's got some of the satire and political savviness of the actual Fallout games, and you know, it is like the Fallout games are. It's about as engaging as they are when it comes to social issues and politics and stuff like that. And honestly, this first season was building up stuff more than it was like paying a bunch of stuff off as well. Like it obviously set up for the second season, and like the second season is coming. It's confirmed. It's not one of those things where, well, you know, I shouldn't say that, because Amazon's been known to fuck around with shows that seem like a sure thing. So, you know, just like Netflix have done. So who knows? Maybe it will drop, but I doubt it will. So there will be a second season, I'm pretty damn sure. And they've set it up perfect for a second season. And I'm interested to see where it goes. It was a fun show. It was, you know, it wasn't anything mind-blowing, but it was fun, especially for a person like me who's a sort of casual fan, has played the games, gets a lot of the in jokes and references, but you don't have to be a person who's played the games either to necessarily get all the in jokes and references. It's not one of those things. It is fan service, but you don't have to be a fan to enjoy it, basically, is what I'm saying. Just don't go in expecting like hard sci-fi and complex social issues and all that stuff. You know, this isn't Three Body Problem or whatever the fuck that new show is. You know, it's not really exploring big, deep concepts like that. It's more interested in giving you kind of fun junk food TV is what it is. At least that's the perception I have. And it's really well acted and it looks great. So it's worth watching. So I'm just going to move into a few movies here. These are all recent watches, and these are all things I've sort of brought up as things to screen for my friends who are not as serious movie nerds as I am. So, you know, I do screenings where I show these people movies. Sometimes Lady Lee's there. So, you know, sometimes there's an other, you know, more serious movie nerd there, I guess, I should say. But usually, you know, it's just my sort of casual movie watching friends who want to see new stuff and interesting stuff. And I don't know if I necessarily provide them with that, but they seem to keep coming back for more movies. So I must be doing something right. First one I'm going to mention is Day of the Cobra from 1980. And this is a Enzo G. Castellari film, one with Franco Nero and Sybil Danning and William Berger, or Berger. I can't remember how that's pronounced. It's one or the other. Was it in Jackie Brown? He's brought up in this in what's her name says William Berger. So let's go with Berger. But yeah, Day of the Cobra. This would be the last time Castellari and Franco Nero would work together again until like 1995-ish, I think, with Jonathan of the Bears, which was this weird late period spaghetti western. And it's, I've never seen it, so I can't tell if it's good or not. It's probably not if it's a Italian movie made in 1995. Chances are it's probably not good, but who knows? I might give it a try at some point. But yeah, Castellari, Franco Nero. This is a late period Polizio Teschi. It's got an amazing banger of Paolo Vasili score. Probably pronouncing his name wrong, but it's just got this killer bloody sort of theme song. That it just becomes an instant earworm. And the story is basically Franco Nero is this kind of like Italian expat who is living in the U.S. He's in San Francisco as a detective, and he's kind of like this Marlowe-esque detective, I guess, like hanging around in a big frumpy trench coat and a hat that's a little too big for him. And he just seems like a down-and-out kind of gumshoe bum from a classic noir. And he gets caught up in this case where he has to go back to Italy. And I don't really want to give away too much about it other than, he has to, like, you know, he gets too close to the people he's looking for. There's like a conspiracy. People try to kill him. He's more than capable of fucking them up. When they get in his way. By the end of the film, he does kill a couple people who are to try to fuck with him. And it's this Franco Nero's charm. He's just like, he's such a, like a, just a listless kind of bum and kind of a jerk, but he's so charming. He's Franco Nero. You can't really bum up Franco Nero as much as you try, and as great an actor as he is, he's still Franco Nero, and he's like one of the most beautiful men who ever existed in the world. So it is a little distracting in that regard, but you have to just kind of like buy into it. You have to suspend your disbelief a little bit. I love this film. This is going on my best of first time watches for this year. It was a great little surprise. I shouldn't be surprised, though, because Castellari rarely ever fails, especially when he's teaming up with Nero. Sybil Danning's a perfect femme fatale. She's, you know, at this point, just one of those actresses who's like, you know, vying for like sexiest woman on screen kind of thing. This was kind of like her peak period on film, as just being like, hey, Sybil Danning's in this movie. This movie just got way hotter, and she's probably going to get naked, and there you go. Yeah, I enjoyed this a lot. If you like a good like neo-noir and a little bit of globetrotting and a lot of Franco Nero charm and some pretty good action, and also this movie threatens to go off the rails a couple times too, which I kind of applaud it for, because it takes some leaps, it takes some chances. There's this subplot with Franco Nero and his estranged son who's living in Italy that he reconnects with, when he's in Italy. And let's just say that goes some places. That goes some fucking places. And not creepy pedophile places. Don't even begin to think that shit. But it does go into a weird spot where it's like, okay, movie, you just did this. Okay. I get it. You didn't need to do this, but you did. And I kind of respect you for it. So, yeah, Day of the Cobra. It's streaming on YouTube, a really good copy too. It's like a DVD quality copy on YouTube. There's this really good YouTube channel right now that still exists at the time of me talking about it. Who knows if it will continue to exist. It's one of those ones where it's like, hey, we upload a bunch of movies and then eventually we get stricken down. It's called Guns and Drugs. And it's basically just Italian and other Euro action movies, police movies, especially like Poliziotteschi's and stuff. So it's there if you want to find it. And I think it's on Rare Lust as well and some other places. So you can find it if you are willing to dig a little bit. Next one I'm going to mention, Strike Commando from 1987. It was directed by the schlockiest of Italian schlock directors, Bruno Mattei. Sometimes he scores, sometimes he just bottoms out with the worst shit that you could possibly think of. Strike Commando is one of his, not necessarily knocking it out of the fucking ballpark, but he's getting at least a double or a triple, you know, if you use baseball terminology. I don't even like baseball, but I'm using it. I think everyone understands what that means, right? So Strike Commando 87, starring Reb Brown, who was Captain America at one point in I think it was the TV movie he was captain, or was it the Roger Corman one? Yeah, it was the Roger Corman one, was it? I'm pretty sure it was the Roger Corman Captain America. But yeah, it's got Reb Brown. It's got Christopher Connolly, who was a great villain who popped up in a bunch of Italian movies. This was like his second last movie. He actually, you know, speaking of Franco Nero, his last role was his next movie after this, the sequel to Django 2, the only official sequel to Django. And it's not a good movie, but I mean, Christopher Connolly kind of always brought it, though, as a bad guy. So he's here. And then we got a secondary bad guy who's your heavy hitter. This is Alex Vitali, who was in like a handful of films around this time. Most notably, he was in stuff like Robot Jocks. I can't remember what else he was in. That's the one that pops out the most. But he's just this big, muscular, bald guy. And he's the heavy, and he has like a really badly shot fight with Reb Brown at one point near a waterfall, and things don't go well for him. But it's like a it's so bad it's good kind of thing. This movie is pretty laughable at points. It takes a while to get going. That's his biggest problem. But once Mattei lets Reb Brown just start running away with things, Reb Brown does his best bad acting. And he, you know, he's just chewing scenery with how yell he how loud he sort of yells. Did I say I'm screwing up my words here? It's fine. Not going to edit it. So fuck you. Reb Brown just like takes this for a fucking ride, and he's not a great actor. Reb Brown is not a great actor. He's passable given the right stuff to work with, but he decided to chew the scenery here. He decided to shout through the celluloid at the viewer. And it's a thing of beauty. He just goes off the fucking rails. And this is kind of like, I'm trying to remember what these movies, which one. I think it's Rambo 2 and Missing in Action. I think it's kind of a mashup of those. Because it involves Vietnam, Reb Brown is like a special strike commando, and his team gets left behind and allowed to be wiped out by Christopher Connolly, who was in command, and so Reb Brown has to he vows revenge basically, and he ends up going back to Vietnam for some reason. I can't remember the exact details, But he gets on the trail of Christopher Connolly again, and is like, I'm gonna take revenge, and it becomes a revenge movie after that. So yeah, not bad. It ends pretty well. I'll say that. Like, it's just Red Brown gunning people down in the last like 20 minutes of the film. So mindless entertainment, but pretty darn good when it's all said and done. Strike Commando 1987. Have not seen the sequel, but I plan on watching it. I know Red Brown isn't in the sequel. I think it's just like a totally different story. I don't even know if it's the same character that Red Brown was playing in the first one that's in that one. I do know that Richard Harris is in that. Famed actor Richard Harris, who probably had no money for booze that week, so probably took a paycheck there. But, you know. All right, just before we get to the last movie I'm going to talk about, just continuing on with the comments in the live video here, CB Fall just saying, I'm doing very well, thanks for asking. Well, that's excellent to hear. And, yeah. So, last movie I'm going to talk about, Tentacles, 1977. It was directed by Ovidio G. Asinaitis, a notorious director and even more notorious producer of a lot of great trash, and some decent movies here and there, too. You know, he's one of those guys who every once in a while sneak in a great genre movie with his name on it. But more often than not, the stuff was like Tentacles. And Tentacles from 77 here, like I said, a Jaws ripoff. But instead of a great white shark, giant octopus, which is cool. Great idea. Everything with the octopus is done really well. They use both shots of real octopus, of course, close-up shots. They have a fake octopus that they use at some point that is obviously just like a immovable, like octopus head that they sort of drive through the water, but it works. It does the job it's supposed to do. There's this one moment of great, just like pure horror that they pull off really well, where there's these two divers, trapped in a diving bell. And the octopus has a hold of it, and the octopus's eye shows up in the window, and it looks in, and it's like, that's really good stuff. Like, that is just creepy shit. This movie has a ton of great actors in it. It's got great director and actor John Huston in this. It's got Shelley Winters in this. It's got Bo Hopkins. Okay, he's not so great, but it's got Bo Hopkins. He's a name. And it's got Henry Fonda in here for a cup of fucking coffee, too. I'm sure he only worked one day, and he had like five lines, and he said them all, took his paycheck, and got the fuck out of there. John Huston and Shelley Winters, bless them, true professionals who decided, you know what, this movie's shit, but we're going to give you performances. We're going to walk away with this material. We're going to do some stuff, and they do. Shelley Winters wears a big hat. I'm pretty convinced that she was probably drunk the entire shoot, but that just enhances her performance. John Huston just plays this, like, I guess he's a reporter or something. It's a little nebulous to me what his job is actually is. I've seen this movie a few times and I still can't remember, but whatever it is, he at one point wears a full body, like almost like a muumuu, but a male muumuu. In his house, and he smokes pipes, and he asks questions, and says stuff that is supposed to be important, but I don't really feel like it is necessarily all that important to the plot of the film. And you get some, you know, you get attacks from the octopus. The movie has the balls to kill kids, so that's points right there. It also has the balls to kill your female lead, like near the end of the movie. So I was like, okay, that's really good. But that's also kind of one of its biggest mistakes too, because then Bo Hopkins, who is the boyfriend of the female lead who gets killed, he has to take over the last like third of the film and be your main protagonist. And he just can't match up to our other actors here. And he does this weird gimmick where he's got these two orca that he trained all of his life or whatever the fuck in the SeaWorld-ish park. I don't know if it's actually SeaWorld, but it's something along the lines of SeaWorld. And he brings them out in like a special submarine to let them loose to attack the octopus. And it feels all very unnecessarily weird. It's just like, okay, this is bizarre and it's not really working. I mean, the orca attacks on the octopus look good, but still it feels like a lame way to get rid of the octopus at the end. They borrowed so much from Jaws. They could have just borrowed the throw a compressed air tank at the fucking octopus and it puts its tentacles around it and he shoots it or whatever, you know. I just feel like they tried a little too hard. They overthought the ending of this film is basically it. You don't necessarily have to overthink the ending of your film. You could just, no one was going to care if they directly ripped off Jaws. Other than that, some stretches of this film just kind of drag a little bit when they're talking a little too much. But it is a beautifully shot film. It looks really fucking good, honestly. And like I said, the octopus stuff looks really good. It doesn't look super cheap and dumb. Even cleaned up DVD quality, Blu-ray quality, whatever, still looks really, really good. And it's got a Stelvio Cipriani score. Most of it sounds like a spaghetti Western, like something he had sitting around from a spaghetti Western that he was going to score, but maybe didn't, or just like leftover tracks from what he did score that he didn't use. But the main title theme is, and it, you'll know it when you hear it, is one that, is done in the, done with a harpsichord, I believe. Am I thinking the right instrument? The thing Lurch plays in the Addams Family. And he's used that theme or a variation of that theme in several other movies around this time. You can hear it pop up in a couple of Plisiotesques. I think it pops up in like a horror movie or something here and there. He's used it a few times. Something Cipriani would often do, honestly. I feel like he was kind of notorious for it. But it's a great score. But yeah, Tentacles is kind of a letdown at the end of the day. It's just kind of a barely passable film, in my opinion. Could have been so much better had they just not fucked around with the formula as much as they did. So yeah, there we go. That is the episode. Like I said, tend to keep these short if this is your first time hearing one of these intermission episodes. And yeah, I just felt like I need to get something out because we haven't done a regular episode in a couple weeks. Should be getting back to doing some regular episodes. I just had like personal stuff going on. Lady Lee was still busy with school. And I just didn't have the energy or the time. Well, I had the time. I just didn't have the energy or the drive to do anything last couple weeks, honestly. It's just been bad, period. I don't want to get into details there, but, you know, needless to say, I'm ready to get back into doing some episodes again. So we will be doing regular episodes, and I might start doing more episodes with video versions that I re-release. So we'll see about that. No promises there, but I've been flirting with the idea for a while now. I was thinking maybe if I could start getting a regular kind of schedule going on where I start doing these more often, maybe get more engagement from people because they can watch it live and interact or whatever. But, you know, that's more or less up to the like 60 to 100 people who listen to this podcast at any given time. So we'll see. Anyway, I'm going to get out of here. Thank you all for listening. And we'll be back. When we're back, goodbye.
You have been listening to They Must Be Destroyed on Sight. For further episodes of this podcast, please go to tmbdos.podbean.com. Thank you. Drive through.